Limits, you failed to inform me how long the Batconian mongoose is staying.
That's because he hasn't told me.
Is he there?
Yeah, let's ask him.
Well, wait a second. Why didn't you ask him? Don't blame him. He's not going
to
say, oh, hi, Limits. I'll be on for two segments today.
What I wanted to do was back Brian into a corner where if I don't ask him, maybe he wouldn't feel entitled to join us for two.
Well, it's going to be awkward either way when we ask him on live radio. How long are you with us, mongoose?
You don't want to back a mongoose into a corner. You could get your face ripped off for doing something like that, Limits. No, I mean, he didn't ask me. I think he would have, but we were making small talk about television shows and reality stars, so we didn't get around to it. But I think if you guys are nice to me, I can probably stick around for a second one.
That'd be great. What stood out to you about the Tomlin news conference? That's why we pay you the big bucks to come on. Brian Back, go with the Post-Gazette.
What stuck out to me, Joe, was Mike Tomlin's just like me. When he gets to a hotel room, he puts his suitcase on the bed and he unpacks.
Yes.
On the bed. Maybe he hangs up some of his collared shirts and, you know, his blazer and his pants, and certainly takes out the dress shoes. But yeah, because when he said he's not going to unpack his baggage on the collective's bed, I thought, huh, he's in that same state of mind when he travels. I like that.
Yes. And he also, that was the same thing. One of the same things that stood out to me was, digging a little deeper on that. His 8-year drought of winning a playoff game, or really even come close to winning, he doesn't want to put on the collective, as he said. And that
he's used that line before.
Yeah, he used the exact same line last year.
And I think Cam Hayward said last year, we're playing with house money. And, you know, they lost. So they're both reminders of how long the Steelers have been on this treadmill, hamster wheel, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, it doesn't really feel as much like Groundhog Day because of the way that they got in this year. They didn't back in. They had to beat the Ravens to do it. So I'm not considering last week a playoff win. But, yes, it feels like they're bringing more momentum into the field and
better
health to do it at home, which is different.
Yeah, a lot of things are. I mean, everything's different to me. Different quarterback than lately. They're healthy. They're at home. And they're not facing an elite MVP-type quarterback. I mean, you couldn't ask for bigger differences than a lot of their recent playoff games, could you?
Well, they're 10-7 again. So in that sense, they're kind of the same old Steelers of this. What do you always call it? High-end mediocrity?
Yes.
Joe. So there's that. C.J. Stroud, yeah, I don't think anybody would put him in the same tier as Mahomes, Allen, or even Lamar. But it'll be interesting for me to see, like, hey, is this going to be another game where the stark reality is you don't have one of the up-and-coming stars at quarterback in the AFC, and you're reminded of that in the first round of the playoffs, in the wild card round. So that stands out to me as a juicy subplot as well.
Limits, why don't you play a couple of clips from the Tomlin news conference, and we'll give the mongoose center stage here.
I'd love to. I first would like to bring this to your attention, Brian, because Tomlin does not like when Myles Garrett is brought to his.
Mike, you guys, the offense struggled against the Browns. You guys were putting the effort in to stop Myles Garrett as a pass rusher. Now you're dealing with two elite edge rushing threats. How do you guys make the plan work in pass protection while not while avoiding the pitfalls that hit you guys against the Browns in the offense?
Let me be clear. I've mentioned this several times, but you guys don't seem to hear me. We didn't do anything uniquely against the Cleveland Browns from a protection standpoint that we don't always do when we play the Cleveland Browns. We did the same thing the first time we played Cleveland. We won the game. We scored more points. He had zero sacks. And so there was no significant sea change. We certainly got a challenge this week because they have a formidable tandem. But as I mentioned, we better do a really good job of minimizing the amount we're in those one-dimensional circumstances.
Brian?
Is that one of those Shakespeare, thou doth protest too much type of answers there, right? I made this point last week on the show with Austin, but like, I think there's a little bit of a sliver of truth in between. Yeah, you did nothing different schematically versus the Cleveland side of it, which is, oh, you changed your whole game plan to keep this guy out of the box score. I think there's a gray area. There's a middle of the Venn diagram where, yes, the Steelers did what they often do to try to minimize Garrett like they did in that first game. But but that Aaron Rodgers himself was sort of making some decisions of, I'm not even going to attempt to extend this play or hold on to this ball a little longer for something to develop, because we can get out of here with a win and we can get out of here without Garrett getting that record on us and potentially knocking me out of the rest of the season with a sack. So I get what Tomlin's saying, but yeah, that struck me. I'm glad you played that clip, Limits, because that is one thing that stood out to me, the way that he kind of not jumped on Chris Carter's question there, but he clearly bristled at the line of questioning yet again.
I mean, go tell Myles Garrett that. Go tell Brian Baldinger. Go tell
Chris Sims.
Go tell...
He's got no dog in the fight.
A lot of different people who said they look to be more interested in avoiding the sack record than winning the game. Obviously, everybody wants to block Myles Garrett, right? Well, it seems to me that other teams like the Patriots basically said he's going to get his and so will we. We're not going to alter things to a ridiculous point. I don't know. Did Kenny Gainwell in the first matchup sacrifice himself as much to blocking and chipping Garrett as he did in the second one? I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Seemed a little odd. Seemed a little odd on third and four late in the game when you need to win to run the ball with Gainwell on the far opposite side where Myles Garrett is. You don't even risk a pass, and you do a running play on a situation third and four that's almost 100% pass in the NFL. Some things seemed very odd in that game, but who cares? We're on to the playoffs.
Yeah, we don't need to relitigate that. It comes down to the Texans' pass rush giving them trouble
from both sides, right?
This week.
Yeah. All right, Limits, what's next for the Batconian Mongoose? Yeah. First, I'm sorry. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Cloudy, 85% chance of rain, high of 49, Dwayne Woodruff. Wow, a low of 31, Donnie Shell. Fan weather brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions, Mr. P.
So one player that's gotten, I think, significantly better as the season has gone on, a couple of bumps in the road, is Keanu Benton, and Mike Tomlin definitely thinks that's the case.
This was good.
To the play of the defensive line on Sunday, have you seen Keanu specifically really take a step this year?
You know, I think he's whooping blocks and making tackles. There's a difference between being active and productive. And certainly he's athletic and active. And there's a lot about his profile that was really attractive, even dating back to draft evals. I love the heavyweight wrestler, for example, and he certainly was a formidable heavyweight wrestler in high school. Those guys generally are better conditioned than most men their size. They have an appetite for working through fatigue that's a little bit different than others. And so certainly he brings some of those things, but I just think there's been an increase in productivity. And certainly we love activity, but productivity trumps activity. And I think he's taken a big step this year in terms of productivity. He's got 5.5 sacks. He's coming off blocks in the run game and winning. Shedding and tackling is a major component of run productivity. And I think his arrow pointed up for him in just about all areas of his game, which leads to more productivity.
Goose?
Or maybe it's just having Derek Harmon next to him. The only thing that was missing from that answer was Mike Tomlin taking another dig at the Harmon narratives. But yeah, I think he's right in that Benton's gotten a lot better over the course of the season. I thought he was struggling early on in the year against the run. He had some really nice flashes against the pass. I think back to that Vikings game where he was just dominating in Dublin. But I thought teams were taking advantage of him on the ground. And when he talks about destroying blocks, I think that's his way of saying, yeah, he's been less of a liability when teams want to just run it up the gut on us. So credit to Benton for the development. And I don't know that we've talked, and the coaches too, and I don't know if we've talked much about the future for him. We've talked a lot, I think, about Joey Porter Jr. potentially getting an extension this offseason. But obviously Benton in that same draft class, what will they decide to do with him? That remains to be seen, especially with a couple rookies coming up in the pipeline as well.
Yeah, the more I think about it, Brian, as we all know, there's only so much money to go around. I think the guy who could be left out in the cold here because he merits a big fifth year is Broderick Jones. And these other guys that we're talking about are going to get theirs. And he's not. That's what I think anyway. That makes sense to me. Well, you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fifth year does, you know, it changes the calculus a little bit, but only if you pick it up. And I don't really
think
they're in a position to do that with the way that he's played. And then, you know, you hope that neck injury can be as routine as a neck injury and subsequent surgery can possibly be. But, you know, it's still a health concern going into next year. And obviously, you know, Dylan Cook has had some good string of games at left tackle. So, yeah, I mean, that class, it'll be interesting to see how the chips fall there. As much as I've liked Benton's improvement over the course of this year, I don't know that I'd be rushing to go out and sign him. That's a position that commands a lot of money in today's NFL. And you've got Derek Harmon waiting in the wings to be kind of the Batman to, or the Robin to Cam Hayward's Batman. And you've got Y.A. Black, who can maybe develop into a starter based on some of what we saw in training camp and things of that nature. So yeah, we'll see with Benton. I'd prioritize an extension for Joey Porter Jr. over him still, I think.
That's a pretty good question moving forward. Okay. Brian, are you up for this? A little homework assignment during our very brief intermission, because we are going to rank the AFC playoff quarterbacks and the AFC playoff coaches. And I'll tell you, I've been trying to do this, while you were talking, and I'm having trouble. Obviously, I'll just say the candidates. The quarterbacks are C.J. Stroud, Bo Nix, Trevor Lawrence, Rodgers, Herbert, May, and Allen. The coaches are Peyton, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Vrabel, McDermott, Cohen, and Ryans. This is not easy. I'm telling you right now, this is not an easy exercise. Yes, Josh Allen is the best quarterback. At least I think that's what everyone will say. But after that, you've got some work to do, Mongoose. I hope you have a writing utensil or a computer handy. Limits, I know you do. We'll do all of
that. It's all up here.
We'll do all of that.